God, it was one movie where literally everything, I can only describe it like as piss yellow.
Oh my God.
Yeah, it was Let the Right One In, where literally everything from like the parking lot to the inside the kids' house is, I remember watching, I was like, this is piss yellow. Welcome to Red Pill, Blue Pill, an open discussion podcast about all things film. We're your hosts, Kat
and Fid. Welcome, guys, to episode 3. This is the first version of our segment, The Orange, where we talk about specific segments or components about films overall. And we're both super excited because this topic in particular is very close to our hearts, and that is
color.
Woo! So, Kat, you want to get us started?
Personally, I want to start with saying color has to be my favorite element as a filmmaker. Whether it's watching films or making films, color is definitely that something that always stands out to me, and it's something that I definitely want to integrate in a meaningful way, not just because it looks pretty. So one of the big things that I love about color is the fact that it's very, very, you know, versatile. There's a lot of different ways you can use it. For example, like the color blue, it can mean, you know, calm and relaxing, but it can also mean like a depressing scene. The same thing with like the color green, it can mean health, it can mean nature. But at the same time, it can be like a mundane, horrible office space, you know, like in The Matrix or something like that. So I think as an element of story, that's one of my favorite things about color. The fact that you can use it in so many different ways.
Oh, no, yeah, I totally agree, especially because, I mean, I don't know what your opinion is on this, but like in class, sometimes when we did covered color theory, it was always like, oh, this means this and this means that. And then I could pull up like 5 examples that didn't meet the requirements at all, you get me?
Yeah, exactly.
So to me, like, yes, color is essential. You can tell from seeing black and white films and the way that they had to convey the story and how different that is once color was introduced, because it could tell way more than what, for example, in terms of dialogue. Like, you can tell how black and white films required way more dialogue simply because they just didn't have that use. Whereas, like you said, with The Matrix, just the green gave you that atmosphere and that dread that you kind of like didn't have to overcompensate with either soundtrack or music or some other element that was used before. I mean, any color in particular that stands out to you?
You want to talk about yellow?
I'm down for yellow. First of all, I want to touch on yellow. I want to touch on red. And then black and white, probably.
Yeah.
So go for it. What do you have in mind? Mad Max or?
Oh, yeah, Mad Max for sure, definitely. I think that's one of the most modern films I can think about, that it's so saturated in color, but at the same time, it's so smart in the way it's used. Like every frame, whether it's in the morning where it's yellow, 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 or at night where it's this blue, it gives you the feeling that, you know, we're in this dystopian desert land, you know, even if it's not those beautiful wide shots, you know exactly where you are, the feeling of sickness, the feeling of, you know, war,
right,
with this yellow, this craziness. So I think definitely Mad Max.
Yeah, actually, with war, yellow, and now that you mention it, do you remember Kurosawa's movie with the, I forgot what it was called, the one with the three brothers that each one was a different color? Ran.
Yeah.
Yeah, so basically, that was the first time that I actually paid attention to yellow as a color. Because everything else that you see, like red is very common, you know, we can talk about that for 25 minutes. But yeah, yellow in particular is very interesting, because if you turn it more on the greenish side or on like the pale side, like you do in Mad Max in a lot of scenes, you, like you said, you do get that kind of feeling of sickness. And it's just, there's something so upsetting about that yellow. Whereas if you turn it a little bit more to the red side and it's like an amber orange, which is like my color at this point, like I've decided to claim that color for films. But I really like yellow because of that. It's such a dynamic color. You know, even when you start doing film, it's always that, the classic, right? The blue and the orange, yes, you know, back to back. And it's just, there's so much more. Like yellow and purple on the color wheel was the same as blue and orange. Like they're complementary to each other.
Yeah.
And you don't see it used as much, right? Green and red is used a lot. For example, like I remember, I can think of movies off the top of my head with that combination, right? Amelie,
of course.
We were talking about this last week in The Mood for Love.
Yes.
That's one of the, I think, the best examples of red and green.
It's so rich. Like, I remember watching it and being in absolute awe. It's so rich. Like, you can't take your eye away from it. But none of it's distracting. All of it, like, every block, every, you know, wallpaper, it helps, it enhances the image. It never is to take away or to leave you lost on the frame. Like, you know exactly where your eye's supposed to go.
Exactly. Actually, about being lost on the frame, remember, oh, I watched it with you. Remember Pain and Glory?
Yeah.
Pain and Glory. I feel like you can't talk about color without talking about Almodóvar.
Yeah.
That was the first one that, you know, he's known for color. He's known for his use of color, especially like red. And he kind of lived, I'm not saying he's old, but he kind of lived the transition from from Technicolor. And you can see that in a lot of his films, because a lot of his colors are very punchy, very bright, very saturated, which we'll talk about Wes Anderson and all of these later. But you don't really see that much with as many modern directors, right? They're a little bit more subdued sometimes. But particularly Pain and Glory was... I don't know. He always gives meaning to specific colors and to kind of explain in what mood or in what state their characters are in. But I couldn't get that from Pain and Glory. I felt like it was just all of the colors all at once, all together. But it still made sense, you know? They were completely... I don't know. I've never seen, like, I'm at a loss for words. I've never seen that use of just, like, not one, but, like, seven different colors throughout the entire movie. There wasn't one stage where it was all green or, like, all... yellow or all red. It was always every color.
Yeah, it was almost like triadic in a way. Yeah,
it was crazy. So that one kind of threw me off a little bit. And then what else?
Mr. Wes. You can't talk about color without Mr. Wes Anderson.
You love him.
Absolutely. No, like, he, I think very few directors have been able to use color not only as like an aesthetic thing but as well as storytelling. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of people might overlook Wes Anderson just because, like, oh, the whole frame is pink. He's being whimsical, whatever. But I think he's also goes beyond just, like, oh, everything's going to be pink, everything's going to be yellow. It signifies something for that character and that character's mind space.
Right. Every single movie is different, right? Like, what was the one with the two kids that write letters to each other?
Moonrise Kingdom.
Like, if all of his movies can be summarized kind of in a color. Moonrise Kingdom is yellow, right? And Grand Budapest Hotel is pink.
Yes.
And I wanna know what the French Dispatch is gonna be. I'm very excited for that. That's gonna be interesting. I really hope he delves a little bit into green. I feel like he avoids green a lot in a lot of respects.
It can be hard. It can be intimidating. Green, yeah.
I mean, yeah. Honestly, I can't think of a lot of movies that are green. I can think of a lot of reds. Like, reds can mean pretty much anything. Even from, like, the masters, the kind of film, you know? Cries and Whispers was all red.
Yeah.
And white was a really important color, too, right? And then, what else? Oh, freaking, all of the French New Wave guys. Like, Godard. I can, every single movie that is not, you know, black and white by him is either really red and blue or red, blue, and yellow, right? The primary colors. But I think, actually, talking about Godard, he was probably one of the first ones that I think... use the idea of whole selective color, because, you know, French New Wave was always like, we don't care about, you know, the rules, let's break all the rules or whatever. But they, little did they know that they were making their own. It was the first time that I think color was used for a purpose that was just not only conveying, you know, the natural world or whatever. And I think that kind of really helped the way that we see color in modern films, right? Because think about it, digitally, it's so easy for us. Like, I can't understand how people spend so much time, you know, like with film, I think they have to like split it in prisms or something. And then the negative had to be tinted in the opposite color or something. I don't really know.
Yeah, it was a ridiculous process.
It was such a hassle. And now we click a button, Kat. Like, we...
the little slider.
We literally shift a freaking Luma curve, and then we have... like, with sliders, we just make everything a different color, and it's just... they had to put so much thought into it, because I can't picture something like Cries and Whispers, for example, all in blue.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, I was thinking, like, Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? A lot of people, you know, it's the first film that was digitally colored. It's insane. You know, that was released, what, 20 years ago, maybe?
I don't even know. I feel like everybody kind of knew there was always something important on an emotional standpoint, right? Because cinema is really about, like, you know, manipulating time and emotion more than anything. I don't think other arts really do it to the extent that cinema does. But there's always been in the back of our minds that color is such an important aspect of that.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, thinking, you know, the fact that, you know, cinema comes from painting, cinema comes from, you know, photography. And, you know, nobody knows color better than, you know, the old classic painting masters. So I think from a primal level, we just know that even though we don't 100% understand it, or, you know, we're still studying it, color is something that is important to humans. Like, you know, you paint your room a certain color to help you feel relaxed, you know. advertising knows. You put red, you put yellow, you want to go eat McDonald's. You know, so color is definitely, it's everything. It's everything.
Yeah. No, and I like what you said about the whole painting thing, because you can, it's almost the people that have either a background in painting or like just understand color differently from other people, you can tell it in their films. So like we were talking about Kurosawa a couple minutes ago, he I think was trained in painting, if I'm not wrong, someone fact check me, but I'm pretty sure he was a painter before he was a filmmaker. And then who else? Oh, I forgot his name, but the guy who did Drive.
Oh yeah,
apparently, I don't know if this is true, but like he can't see mid-tones or something like that, which justifies why his movies are so contrasting.
Oh, really?
I heard that. I don't know. This is like a random conversation I had with but it even changes like the way that you see the world. And I kind of really didn't think about that. Like, even if, I don't know, colorblind filmmakers, how do they make those choices, right?
That's true.
I feel like it's intrinsic, not only to film, but like the person who's making it, right?
Yeah, I don't know if now you want to go into like specific movie examples and just go down our list.
Yeah, so, I mean, I talked about Ran because the whole yellow thing, and that kind of led into Mad Max. I have a bunch in mind specifically for Red and Red and Blue. You know, the whole A Woman is a Woman. That was the first one that I was like, oh my god, Red and Blue, you know. I have to mention those because those are our RPVP colors, so why not?
Exactly.
There was another one. I forgot that. I had these all on top of my head. And now when we're doing the podcast, I blank out on the names. But it was like the Godard movie where this dude leaves his family to run away with the girl that's chased by hitmen. Piero something. Piero the Madman. Something like that. But he uses the same red and blue colors. And I loved those things. It threw me off at first because I was like, why would you necessarily pick those colors? It's kind of basic. Like, be something, do something more creative, Godard. Come on, you're supposed to, you know, step out of the box. But it became an aesthetic. And then that kind of leads us again into the Wes Anderson thing, that he's made color part of his personality, part of his filmmaking style. And that's so brilliant to me. I just hope that, you know, one day we can kind of understand color to the extent that they do, right?
No, for sure. That's the goal.
Yeah. What other examples do you have in color before we move on to absence of color?
One that really stood out to me, I'll never forget it, the first time I saw it, would be like Moonlight. Moonlight, I remember watching that floor.
The teal and the purple.
Teal and the purple. That, you know, the bedroom where Little is having that moment where his mother is yelling at him, but you don't hear anything. You just see that purple light behind her. It's one of those, definitely those frames in film that is going down in history.
Right.
And then, obviously, my favorite film of all time.
The Fall.
The Fall. I think...
Wait, before we move on to the podcast, I know you have something to say about Moonlight, which is something that I've noticed also. In terms of lighting, it really depends the story also from a cultural perspective.
Yes.
Because if you had made the equivalent of like the Moonlight color scheme with non-black actors, it wouldn't have looked good.
The same.
Because the skin doesn't reflect the colors the same way. And it helps the tone and the mood of Moonlight so much that, I don't know, it kind of blew my mind a little bit to see colors like that kind of magenta-ish and that cyan blue that are just not commonly used be the primary colors for a movie. It's just, it comes to show how culture kind of also affects the lighting choices.
Yeah, I remember, like I told you, last semester was like all about color and lighting, you know, darker skin tones. And it's crazy. It's crazy how like the traditional blue nighttime color looks so different from someone who's so pale compared to someone who has like a darker skin tone. It's like, it's not on the same level. So, yeah.
I know, but it helps with, like, versatility, you know?
For sure.
Anyways, okay, sorry for the digression. Go ahead. The Fall.
That's easily my favorite movie. I feel it's super underrated, especially when talking about color. Because it's kind of like the Ran thing where, like, every character has their own specific color. And, you know, this is this character, this is that character. But then also it has these grand moments. Like, there's one where, like, the flag where they bury the brother. And it's this pure white flag. And then the blood red going up. Like, the blue city. Insane. And these are, like, actual locations. Even that, outside of film. This is, like, the blue city was an actual city.
Yeah.
Painted completely blue. Like, what is that?
That's true. I didn't think of that. The one frame that I have from that movie is when the guy just, like, falls from the tower. And it's just, like, everything's kind of, like, pale yellow. And you just see, like, one... It's an extreme wide shot. It's, like, one little speck of red just falling. I was like...
Yes.
Took my breath away.
yes, yes, yes.
Okay, wait, okay, let's move on to the part that I've been trying to get at.
Go, go.
No, I'm kidding. The absence of color, black and white. To me, like, you know, at first it wasn't a choice, right? You literally had to do black and white if you wanted to do film. But now you see modern filmmakers go back to it, or like sepia tones, you know?
Yes.
And sometimes, you know, it makes me want to scream at them and be like, why would you do that? Like, you can color correct you have DaVinci Resolve, you have all these things, dude. Like, you can shoot raw now. Do you not understand the abilities that you have with the cameras that you have? You know, maybe because we don't have access to them as much, but they have such full control of color nowadays, and they choose to do black and white, right?
Yeah.
And I don't know. I feel like everybody kind of does it for different reasons, but two or three that I have in my head, obviously the award-winning film, The Artist, the one, yes, that was also, like, mute. I love that one. But if you compare it to another black and white film, like Roma, it has completely different meanings, you know?
Yes.
In terms of black and white. Like, or even The Lighthouse, which is the one that I kind of wanted to talk about. They're all black and white films. But black and white was chosen for a completely different purpose, right? And it was meant to tell a completely different feeling, right? So, I mean, I don't know what you thought about The Lighthouse. I felt uncomfortable 90% of the time, which was kind of the point. And I appreciate it. But, like, the whole black and white thing in that movie was kind of, like, giving it that harshness or the austerity. Like, I remember seeing Robert Eggers was in a podcast where he talked about why he chose black and white.
Yeah.
And he was like, oh, it was because to kind of, like, it gives it the grain a specific look. And I was like, okay, that's going, like, a little bit too far, bro. Okay, I get it.
Did they shoot it on film?
I think they did, didn't they?
But, if he's talking about grain, then yeah.
And then, I don't know, to just kind of give it kind of a harsh atmosphere, right? Where if you go to Roma, right, by Alfonso Cuarón, it was meant for nostalgic purposes, right? To give it, like, this dreamlike or slightly distant feel of a memory. And it's still both black and white. And then The Artist was just so perfectly crisp. Like, that thing was, like, the sharpest movie I've ever seen.
Yeah.
It was just beautiful. The shading and the amount of grays in that movie just blew my mind when I saw it. And you see it and compare it to The Lighthouse. And The Lighthouse almost seems dirty, kind of, compared to The Artist, you know? So, I don't know. It's just, even in black and white, there's just so much to think about.
Yeah, I think you just said it right now. Like, definitely The Artist is more of like a historical purpose. You know, we're going back in time. Roma, again, a memory. And then The Lighthouse, I think it really serves to that harsh lighting they were going for. Like, mm-hmm. Black and white is the biggest contrast there is. So I think, you know, they all chose it for very specific reasons. That also reminds me of like Schindler's List.
Yeah.
You know, everything is black and white except for that little girl in red. And again, like, that is such a smart use of, you know, what we consider traditional versus this one spot of color that brings out so much emotion. You immediately know what it means, you know, when you see the red jacket on, you
yeah, know. on the girl. Yeah, I didn't think, I mean, you can even compare it. This is a horrible comparison, but Sin City kind of does, yeah, that, right?
Exactly, though. Yeah, it's, again, that character color, that story element, that when you see it, automatically it clicks.
Right. Ah, that's so true. I didn't think of that, Kat. Thank you for that.
You're welcome.
But bottom line, this is kind of a personal question, but I want to know. We talked about, like, all the instances, right? Kind of, almost. What would you consider to be your use of color or your aesthetic? Or what would you, like, want it to be, you know?
This is actually interesting because we actually had to do a project where the only project was to do, like, a mood board, like, on Pinterest. Like, find images that speak to you, whatever it is, and put it together. And, no, I was comparing my mood board to my work, and I feel like it kind of reflected what I wanted to do. I definitely, you know, I love color. That's one of the things that draws me in as a cinematographer. And it's definitely, whenever I'm trying to work with someone, bring up the importance of having a color palette, making sure that it's everywhere. So I think, for me, you know, color, again, like how I started, it's so versatile. It's not just like for aesthetic purposes. You can use it for story.
Right.
And that, you know, that's what film is, story.
Any colors you avoid?
That I avoid?
Yeah. I can tell you which colors I avoid right now, dude. I avoid green at all costs if it's not natural. I don't like punchy green. It just, it upsets me. Like, I don't know what it is about it. I love yellow. I love purple. Like, if it's, like, a darkish green, kind of, like, a subdued green, that's fine. But if it's, like, lime green that isn't grass or isn't plants. It's not natural. I just added, there's something really off-putting about it. And I'm just like, nope.
Lemon jello.
For real. And it's just even green lighting, like just in general, it on the skin tone, it's so sickening. It
makes you feel sick.
Yeah, I don't know. And most of like the stories that I'm making are like warm and fuzzy and stuff, so that's why like yellow is always my go-to. But I feel like you're usually around like the kind of red blue kind of thing, you know. No surprise with RPBP right now, you know.
Exactly. No, I definitely find myself like in that neon color palette stuff that's kind of popular. But no, yeah, I think I wouldn't shy away from any color, even green, if given the opportunity to put it in some, you know, meaningful way in the story.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, if it has a purpose, right, go ahead. Exactly. But I feel like if you have a choice, also black and white is something interesting. I've wanted to play around, not necessarily black and white, but with sepia.
Yeah.
Like that, it just gives it such a, I'm all about warmth. So it gives it a very warm, even tone that I feel like might be very interesting to play with, especially with like the high quality images that you can create nowadays. The amount of dynamic range in the color itself.
Yes.
I don't know. It's really interesting. I don't know. We got to see. Color correction is really important to me. So.
I don't know, but that's like a whole other episode.
Oh, yeah.
You can go and just move it one point that way.
We'll save that one for the next one. But yeah, in closing thoughts, Kat. I feel like we've talked long enough about color. We could do it for way longer, but you know.
Yeah, for sure. Closing thoughts, color is life. Make sure your image looks good enough to eat. And that's it.
I love it. Oh, my God. I guess mine would be just... Think before you color.
Think before you color.
Seriously.
I like that. That's smart. I like that.
Thank you. Anyways, I guess that's it for this one. You wanna lead us out, Kat?
Yeah, of course.
I love today's episode. This was too much fun.
Yeah, this is a lot of fun. But yeah, you can find us on RPBB Podcasts on Instagram and SoundCloud. Follow us there, and hopefully we'll see you on the next episode.
This podcast is brought to you by no one. Are your Chipotle, please sponsor us before someone else does. Voiced by your hosts, Catherine Mairena and Fernanda Lamuño. Original music by Alec Dreith and Sadine Dasun. Graphic design by Natalie Mairena. Copyright 2020 RPBP Podcast.